Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 125.
Three, weird.
Three. This is episode 125 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. Xander wants us to do a little Monty Python bit at the beginning, and you know what? I'm going to indulge you.
Right. One, two, five.
Lisa,
three.
I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my lovely hostess, Aaron Paulette. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, I'm doing better than last week. Last week was just full of stuff. As an example, on Sunday, there was the Second Amendment Rally for Your Rights, or Rally for Your Second Amendment Rights, I don't remember, particularly how it's phrased, and it was another virtual rally because, well, the COVID nonsense, and it was originally scheduled to be in D.C. in front of the Capitol building, and I understand that the Capitol Police, like, it didn't yank the permit, but it was one of those, we'll only allow 50 people to be there, at which point, you know, why have a rally?
Mm-hmm.
And so I recorded a segment, and I've gotten all sorts of praise for it, which is kind of surprising because, oh, geez, when I recorded that, it took me a long time. Look, I can read a speech in front of hundreds of people without a problem. I can very obviously read a script into a microphone. But when it comes to video, I screw up constantly. And some of that is because I can't cut that. You know, if I screw up here, you'll just make a note, you'll cut, we'll fix it in post. But that's really hard to do in single camera video, especially with a webcam, because when I go back to do it, I will have moved, and that will be jarring. And maybe I'm just being a perfectionist, I don't know. And so I stumble, and it's really frustrating to stumble like three quarters of the way through, and it's just, oh, jeez, now I have to go back and do it again. And so I don't know how many takes that took. I was at it for hours. And towards the end, I was just bone tired. My voice was gravelly because I'd been talking a lot. And I just felt like every fiber of my body was radiating, I hate this. I would rather be beaten. This is the final take, and if you don't like it, go to hell. And when I turned it in, it was like, I truly felt deeply embarrassed by the poor quality of what I turned in. It's like, this is the worst thing I've ever turned in, but I just don't have it in me to do it anymore. And obviously, I'm my own worst critic, because I showed it to friends, and they said, no, it looks fine, you look fine, it's great. You know, what I thought was low energy, they were saying, no, you were speaking clearly and concisely. And so that was great. And I didn't have to worry about resting bitch face at all, which is fantastic. But just continuing the theme of the week that was, when that went live, I wasn't watching it. I was in the emergency room with my mother. So everything's okay now, but the relevant facts are, within about the past 10 years, I don't remember when, mom had surgery on her neck to have some of the vertebrae fused. I don't remember which ones. And she's had a history of neck problems before. I mean, she suffered whiplash, like, you know, 40-some-odd years ago, and it's just been terrible ever since. And so Sunday morning, she woke up in a lot of pain. It wasn't just, I slept badly and I have a muscle cramp. It was one of those, I'm in really a lot of pain, and I'm having trouble moving my head, and it only got worse, and she couldn't even sleep. And for me, that's one of the big trouble signs. You know, if it's hurting so much that you can't rest, yeah, you have to go to see the doctor, because there's no reason to suffer through that kind of pain. And I was also concerned that this might be a complication from the surgery, because, you know, pain is one thing, and that's bad enough, but when she has restricted movement and it is getting more and more restrictive as the hours pass, yeah, let's not screw around with that. And so I drove her to the emergency room, and honestly, we picked the right time for it. It was like, 3:34 in the afternoon. The rally started at 4, and there was hardly anyone there, and we got in quickly and got seen by a doctor quickly. Fortunately, the doctor did not think that Mom needed any x-rays, and Mom is trying to avoid anything extraneous like that. And so they injected her with muscle relaxants and gave her prescription. Okay, so you know the little sticky pads, like on Icy Hot, that you can put on your back, and they're sticky and they've got the slow release topical thing. Yeah, she got one of those, but it was prescription for lidocaine.
Nice.
And so she's been on that for over 24 hours now, and the pain is at least manageable, as opposed to, you know, keeping her from sleeping. And she was so proud today. She said, "Look, I've got better range of motion." And she moved her head like in a 15 degree arc because previously she was basically like, it hurts. And so she was like someone in a cervical collar. You know, it's like, if you want to turn your head, have to turn your body. And so she was so proud that she had like 15 degrees of movement. It's like, yeah, that's great, Mom. I mean, I'm really proud that she can move it, but it's just, wow, that got really bad, didn't it? So, I haven't watched the entire thing. Of course, it's like 3.5 hours long. So if people, look, I will not shame you if you haven't watched the whole thing. Although, weird, I will shame you if you haven't watched my video. That was an excellent, like, 5.5 minutes. Did you watch it?
I haven't gotten a chance to.
You suck!
I will say, Aaron, that for the patrons of the show, you are, especially those that have the full boat, but for the $4 level, they're going to get something every day this week. So you're listening to this on Friday. Monday there was the announcement that the previous episode had gone live. Friday's the episode that's going through, and Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday I have got things planned, because we had a movie marathon, so we've got some spooky movies for Halloween, and then I believe there's a blooper reel coming out as well. So Weird Beard's been a busy beaver cranking out stuff.
That's great for the patrons, but, you know, you'd better not neglect me.
I love you so much, Aaron.
But, yeah, well, apparently you don't love me enough to watch my performance.
I will see you. I saw it when you posted it, and I clicked on it, and I saw super duper long number, and I just went, oh, I don't have the time for this. And so I will get onto this post haste.
We'll have a link in the show notes to the YouTube video. Because even though it was streaming live, it is now saved for posterity. And I will include a link to the time sequence, the whatever the word is,
the
for you go timestamp, and then you'll go straight to my video.
Awesome.
Although I really do encourage people to listen, because we've got 30 speakers and it's incredibly diverse and really cool people, you know, including Chris Chang and Tony Simon and Yehuda Remmer and Cheryl Todd and Amanda Suffcool. And so it was a really nice show of diversity, where people talked about what the Second Amendment meant to them. And so, yeah, I hope you watch. If nothing else, just watch my segment and tell me how awesome I am. That'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah, super awesome. And again, I wanted just to say, oh my God, like, I can only imagine. So there are YouTubers that do the cut together, and they'll put like a fade, you know, like a fade transition, so they'll kind of dissolve into themselves when they make a mistake or need a secondary cut. And once you get used to seeing it, it's not terribly bad, but also if other people aren't doing it in the speech, it will be jarring, and it will make yours look flawed. And oh God, I just imagine when I sit down to record like one of my fisks, and I'll have you know, several pages of script that I'm reading from, and the fact of the matter is, I always kind of say in the back of my head, yep, no, if you make a mistake, just stop and just do it over again, and I'll fix it in post, you know, or we have, while we're recording this, we'll be like, oh, what is the word for that? What's going on to that? Or I need to look this up. Hold on a second. We'll look something up so that we can have the definitive information rather than the wrong information that's off the top of our head. And all of that just takes so much pressure off. And the fact of doing it, I got to do this and I got to do this exactly right from the get go. Ugh, I feel for you, Aaron.
Yeah, the idea of the dissolve is a good one. That requires me to have an understanding of video manipulation that I don't yet have. I've got the tool for it. I'm sure I can figure it out given enough time. Honestly, I'm so done with videos right now.
Yeah, all I do is audio stuff and I just watch videos. And so I'm aware of the effect. I don't know how it works.
I mean, I had a nice long interview with someone from a nonprofit that's talking about gender and sexuality issues, and they wanted to talk about the spike in gun sales by queer people. And I said, I am happy to do an interview, but no video. You know, it's like we can talk on the phone, we can talk by email, whatever. Just please don't make me do a video. And her reply was, I so understand this. I am so tired of Zoom. You have no idea. I'm completely fine with that. It's like, yes.
Yeah, I don't even own a webcam. I'm in my jammies. I don't need to look presentable.
Oh, believe me, I wouldn't own a webcam if I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so shall we dive into these topics? There's two. Which one do you want to cover first? Do you want to go high or do you want to go low?
Oh, geez. I guess let's do Amy Coney Barrett first.
Okay. So we've talked about it previously on the show that Amy Coney Barrett was the nominee for the Supreme Court, and that overall she's got a positive Second Amendment ballot history, and so we saw that as good. And there was a little bit of a political theatrics, let's just say, in her confirmation, but overall it wasn't too bad. It certainly wasn't to the level of what Brett Kavanaugh had to endure. But it turns out, as we are recording this, she is officially confirmed. I mean, probably if I wanted to look into the news feed, supposedly Trump is heading off the campaign trail into Washington, and he's actually going to swear her in tonight or be in there for the, I think Clarence Thomas is going to actually be the one that actually swears her in, and he is going to be present for that tonight. So I wanted to congratulate Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, to the ACB, to the Supreme Court. I think it's wonderful for her. She's got to be so excited. And I told Aaron that there was a twist on that. And I actually don't
know what it is. This is completely a surprise. I have no idea what he's going to spring on me.
Something that's just a factoid that somebody pointed out. But I also wanted to. We are recording this on Hillary Clinton's birthday, so happy birthday, Hillary Clinton! And look what Donald Trump got you for your big present.
Ow.
Somebody mentioned that on a radio show, and I just thought that was just so hilarious that they were such serendipitous dates. But yeah, so this is good. Hopefully, I mean, we already had the show where we talked about the fact that the Supreme Court passed on all of the Second Amendment cases, and there are multiples of them, and they are all good. They're all really, really good cases. And the Supreme Court passed on every last one of them. And I find that very upsetting. But hopefully in the very near future, there will be another opportunity for the Supreme Court to hear on some different cases. Because obviously those ones, they got passed down. They're not ever coming back. But some different, hopefully similar cases to cover some of this ground that I felt Heller laid the groundwork for, but of course, clearly the people that instilled these anti-Second Amendment laws aren't going to be particularly concerned about, you know, that unless you physically make them get rid of their crappy laws. So hopefully the the stick will be coming soon from the Supreme Court to stop just the just blatant violations of the Second Amendment that have become every day in certain states of the Union.
I'll just be over here holding my breath.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm again. You hear the cynicism in my voice, but yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hope, but I have had my hopes dashed too many times. I'm very cynical right now. And related to this, I have a lot of friends, a lot of queer friends, who are worried about this appointment because they fear, and I don't want to make light of their fears, but I also don't quite think it's as bad as they say it is, but they are worried that with her conservative Christian views, that a lot of the rights involving gay marriage and transgender job protection laws and things like that will get rolled back. And so I am sensitive to their concerns. I mean, I'm not going to tell them that they have nothing to worry about, but I would like to think that such a well-educated woman, we've all seen the picture where she was answering questions on cases without having to have notes, that she understands the purpose of the First Amendment, including the separation of church and state, and she's able to separate her beliefs from how the law is applied to everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, I understand your concern. I don't think it'll be that bad, but I really have no way of knowing. And you know, if this happens, well, I don't know how I'd fight it, but you know, I'm definitely in your corner, and I know Weird is in your corner.
Absolutely.
And you know, we are very strongly on the case of rights for everyone. So I just want our queer listeners to know that you know, your concerns are noted, and hopefully it won't come to that. But I wish I could say you got nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And again, you hear the citizen in my voice when I say I hope that there's some sweeping Second Amendment cases. But again, a lot of this stuff is very just glacial in its movement, and so I certainly don't see like an immediate sweep that's just suddenly they're going to just hear all these things and suddenly abortion's going to be illegal and gay marriage is going to be thrown out and you can do whatever you want to people both over their sexual orientation or their gender identity or any of these protections that are relatively new to our society, but that in no way say that belittles them. And meanwhile, also I'm buying a belt fed machine gun at a gas station with coupons. That's just not going to happen immediately. You know, it took us hundreds of years to get to this point. It may not take, mm-hmm. you know, if there is a massive groundswell, it may not take hundreds of years to go the other direction, but it will take a while. And it will need the entire country will need to be a willing participant for that to go through. And I really don't see this country really as an anti-queer country. I mean, really, even on the extreme conservative group, I mean, the extreme conservative groups, but the more mainstream conservative types, the Rush Limbaughs of the world and the Mitch McConnells and all of that, even they aren't anti-queer. They just have debates on how deep the rights lie, and mm-hmm. and that's as bad as it gets. We don't have the instance where they're being dehumanized and major public figures are. I mean, the big one that you hear a lot about is the just stating that if you are queer and any flavor of queer, it doesn't matter, gay, you know, gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, whatever, all of those, they're child molesters. Where that comes from, I don't know, but that's a thread that I do see pop up in the extreme homophobe groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not even going to throw conservative onto it, because I mean, that's just that's it's so far aberrant to polite society that I don't even necessarily know if it aligns with any one political spectrum. So I don't see that this country as a country supportive of those people that have those extreme and hateful views. There might be some people that will debate on what's going on, just like there are people who debate on, you know, where, hey, weird, do you really think that they should sell machine guns at gas stations? That seems a little extreme. I'm a Second Amendment supporter, but you seem nutty on that. And even I could debate on that issue. I'm really throwing that out more as just a magnanimous wet kiss to the Second Amendment. But you know, there's just even within the Second Amendment community, with people who are legitimate, you know, Second Amendment supporters, we might debate on whether background checks are okay or an infringement, and what level of background checks are we willing to deal with, and other things like that. So I don't see this as an anti-Second Amendment country. I don't see this as an anti-queer country.
I agree. But hey, moving from background checks to red flag laws and the abuse thereof, we've apparently got a... It's really not a breaking story. It is a fully developed story about something that happened in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the story itself is breaking because the victim of this event is coming forward to tell her story. She's just going by the mononym of Cassandra, and she is a divorcee who lives in Toronto, and it's in the show notes. This is from thegunblog.ca. I actually hadn't heard of this this page before this, talking about the story, there's an interview, and there also is a nice write-up for it if you don't want to sit through the 90-minute interview on it, talking about how essentially she had divorced her ex-husband. He was abusive. I don't think she specifies on the what type of abuse she was enduring from him, but clearly psychological abuse is one of the factors on there. And she is Canadian, and she is a Canadian gun owner. And she had essentially a midnight raid where the police came into the house, handcuffed her, dragged her out of bed in her nightie, and brought her out and essentially got her to unlock her gun safe and confiscated all of her firearms because she had been, her husband had declared that she was a danger to herself and others, and went through Canada's red flag laws.
So again, we have what was predicted, that people are using red flag laws to target people they don't like, to target people that they want to see hurt. And people are being hurt by this because these incidents are occurring without judicial oversight. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think that there was a warrant issued. I may have missed that. But
I think the red flag itself behaves like a warrant.
Right. But the thing is, in order to get a warrant, you have to come before a judge. And I don't know if this had that sort of judicial oversight or if it was just there's a red flag, we got to go in. But yeah, if you look at this, this was pretty abusive. So weird. One of the things you neglected to mention is that Cassandra said the police handcuffed her to a stretcher in the ambulance and then left with the key during the drive to the hospital. And that was not cool. Actually, that sounds like a juvenile understatement. The thing is, if there had been an accident, a collision, if they needed to quickly evacuate, the paramedics didn't have the key. There would be no way for her to exit the vehicle unless the paramedics were able to remove the stretcher. And if there was an accident, they might be injured. The vehicle might be on its side or flipped over. And that is incredibly dangerous to her. And there was actually a paramedic friend of Cassandra who said, "I've never seen anything like this in my professional career." I'm not an expert. I know some friends who work in EMS, and while patients sometimes have to be restrained, they're usually restrained with straps, and those are under the control of the paramedic. They can be released. It's not like, well, this patient is shackled, and we can't get her free. And so that's really awful. Also awful, according to this article, is that the party that's in charge of Canada right now, the Liberal Party, has said that it's going to further loosen the regulations on red flags in order to expand who can ask the police to basically raid and arrest people. And so that's just fantastic, mm-hmm. isn't it? According to this, more than 100,000 federally licensed gun owners were criminalized. You know, they were falsely accused of threatening the country's safety. And now these owners risk jail unless they give up their blacklisted rifles and shotguns by April 2022. Now, two things that I want to point out here. I don't know if you mentioned this, but Cassandra shoots professionally for IPSEC. It says here she's a high-level pistol competitor. Mm-hmm. So in order for her to... Okay, it says here she's got a black badge certification. I don't shoot IPSEC. I don't know what that means. That sounds pretty impressive. And so this is clearly someone who has way more training and certification than what's required to own a gun. Mm-hmm. And so this is someone who, you know, in order to own multiple guns in Canada, has jumped through a lot of hoops. She's clearly proven her prowess time and time again. But that doesn't matter, because Avengeful X called in a red flag on her. Now, fortunately, the story does have a happy ending, because the incident we described happened last year. It was October 1st, 2019, when the police raided her, took her weapons, and sent her off for psychological evaluation. But she is now out. I don't know exactly as of when, but she's free. And she has her guns back. The police didn't want to give her the guns back. And she had to get help from an organization called Firearm Legal Defense. They provided her with a lawyer. It took him 3 months to get those guns back. You know, the police refused to return the guns even after the psychologist cleared her. And so she says, the article says, she has taped the lawyer's name and phone number to the outside of her gun safe in case the police raid her again.
Yeah.
It's I'm happy she is free and she has her possessions back. This should never have happened in the first place. And I'm worried about what it'll do to my Canadian friends. And I'm worried that this kind of thing is coming to our country.
I mean, it's already here in certain iterations. I mean, Massachusetts itself has red flag laws. As a matter of fact, I was in an internet discussion with somebody who is a pile of garbage and anti-gun, and they turned around and mentioned the red flag law. I don't know if they went through with it or did anything about it. I certainly saw no results on that, but I have documented that, and I'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, they said they were going to red flag you.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that wasn't clear. Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and so yeah, this stuff absolutely exists. And again, for someone like me who, yeah, I got a ton of guns, like a red flag law, and it's a hobby of mine, and it's a, you know, kind of a key point of everything I do. So yeah, if somebody came through and snatched up all my guns, that would be a major problem. And I mean, on furthermore, it this being Massachusetts, there's a big, I mean, honestly speaking, in Massachusetts, I have got guns that are against the Mother May I regulations that we currently have that were challenged for the Supreme Court and didn't go through. And so I would be wondering if the police seized my guns, if they would be able to, if they would even be able to give all of them back to me. Because they're in a kind of a legal gray area where Mara Healey says she won't prosecute me for owning guns that everyone thought was legal at the time I purchased them, but now have been declared illegal, you know, retroactively by her little dirty little edict. So in theory, I was never allowed to own these guns in the first place, but I have them. So there's that. And then again, you hear about this all the time with like self-defense shootings where the police seize the firearm as evidence for the murder trial that may or may not happen. And then it comes down to the, okay, all the charges are dropped. Cool. Where's my gun? Well, what gun? And they get the runaround, and it requires their lawyer to harp on the police force to actually get their gun released. And I've certainly heard of several stories where they go and open the evidence locker and, oh, it's not here because it was a nice gun and it went home with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is not an uncommon thing. And again, yeah, we talked about this being rife with abuse. Again, if you know, you've got a significant other and there's a divorce, there's abuse, there's a breakup or all of that, and you know that they have guns and they love their guns, this is a magic way to get them to be taken away, at least for a little bit. And I mean, in this case, horribly humiliated and brought through to have a mental evaluation. I mean, that's just think about the level of that, of the, we need to go check you out because somebody who you had divorced for being abusive is saying that you're mentally ill. Like the exact person that I would not trust their opinion at all. So yeah, it's rife for abuse. And it has been abused. It's been used abusively here in the United States as well. I actually don't have a story off the top of my head, but there's definitely been several cases where red flag laws have been used erroneously by people who have had ulterior motives. And of course, I need to step back and say the most important talking point for it, and I've talked about this in my audio fisks as well, towards red flag laws is that even when they are not abused, these are the worst laws ever. Because again, you think about, let's take the two most common cited reasons is mental illness. Somebody is a danger to themselves and others because of mental illness, and they have firearms. You call up the police and send them in, and they come in and they confiscate all the guns and they leave, because there's no statement in our red flag laws in any of the ones that I've ever read towards evaluating the person. It's just, yeah, you come and seize the guns. It's an anti-gun law. It's not a mental health law.
And you've arrested the guns.
Yep. And left the dangerous person free. They can have knives. They can have gasoline. They can have a car. They could do all sorts of stuff. An abusive spouse. Let's say the tables were turned and she, in fact, was abusive to her ex-husband and she had her guns and she was threatening him with the guns. Well, then suddenly the police show up in the middle of the night and take all her guns away. And then even in this instance where she goes in for an evaluation, well, then now she's out. She knows who called the police on her. And so mm-hmm. now she is home and alone to plot her revenge. You know, it only throws fuel on the fire. And then, of course, the suicide aspect. If you've got, say, someone who's a military vet and they're having a hard time with their separation from the military, and they've got their guns and they're having a tough time, and one of their friends finds out that they're really going through a rough patch and that they're worried that they might take their own life. And so they activate a red flag law. And so now this depressed person who's thinking about taking their own life has strangers come through their home and search and violate their property and lock up their guns that are, especially people in the military. I mean, just the I was never in the military, but I've had people tell me just how important it is on the fact that, yeah, no, you got your rifle with you all the time and it's important and you need to have your rifle and you can't lose your rifle and it's always there. And then suddenly you get separated and yeah, no, you don't need a gun anymore. And so a lot of people take comfort in getting themselves an AR-15 or a Beretta M9 or something that is similar to what they had in the military, just so they can have that proximity to the thing that they were trained to always want to have nearby. And now that is gone and they are still depressed and they're not getting any help. It's just, I don't see how these laws, even when used quote unquote perfectly, would be good.
I can see very small, very limited applications for them, like in the case of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooter. You know, that guy should have been red flagged, but we've talked to death about all the ways that law enforcement from local up to the FBI dropped that ball. So I don't know if even calling it in would have done anything.
I mean, I would argue in that specific case, this is someone who red flag laws are irrelevant. This person was arrested for domestic violence. They were violent towards their parents, and they had caused all sorts of disturbance, and they had made threats against people. And then all the way up until like about a month before the shooting, we're literally telling the FBI. This person contacted the FBI and said they're going to shoot up a school.
Mm-hmm.
So red flag laws be damned. This person was committing crimes. Just lock them up.
Exactly. And so I would be willing to grant for purposes of compromise, although I can already hear most of our viewers saying no, never compromise. But I would be willing to compromise. Okay, there may be instances in which such a thing is necessary, but we need controls to keep it from abuse. One of the best ways would be to remove the anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, we're now throwing good money after bad.
Yeah.
I don't have a good solution. You and I both believe that red flag laws are horrible, but I don't know really. It's not a case of what do we replace it with, because like the saying says, you know, if a house is on fire, you don't replace the fire with anything, you put it out. But there's always going to be the people who say, well, what about this? What about that? Mm-hmm. And I don't really have a good answer for that.
I mean, I would argue that any good that I could do for a red flag law to repair the damage would be so drastic that it would no longer resemble a red flag law. But I would say that the doppelganger of a red flag law that I could see how it would work would have to, number one, be concerned about the person, not about the firearms. The only concern about the firearms would just be you don't just kick the person's door down, grab them and take them out, and they're in a living room completely filled with guns, and now their apartment's door is wide open and all the neighbors are gathering around because some of those guns might move off to other places, you know, that make sure that the guns are secured and that, you know, everything is safe in the removal of the person for the evaluation. And there would have to be skin in the game for the reporter. There would have to be statements on the very similar to when you call the police on somebody. Mm-hmm. mean, we had the entrance of the Central Park Karen, where she is currently facing charges, where she was being pestered by a gentleman who, honestly speaking, was kind of being a little bit overbearing, in my opinion, with how he was. But she took it the next step further and called the police and claimed that he was threatening her, and also made a point to mention that he was a black man and that he was threatening her. And I think everybody, especially in the climate where that was going on, was saying that that was very similar to the swatting incidents that go on. Is she wanted the police to come and she wanted an extreme reaction, and she is facing charges for filing a false police report. Mm-hmm. Because clearly the video evidence that is in existence shows that she was exaggerating the facts to get the results that she wanted, and it's probably going to cost her at least something. I don't know if she's going to do jail time, but again, if you end up calling just because you had an internet argument with somebody, or because you're mad at your ex-wife and you know that will hurt her, then that should be deemed a threat and the violence that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is not a red flag law anymore. This is something that resembles what the red flag laws are claimed to do in the first place, which they don't.
Yeah, it has a similarity, unfortunately, to a lot of the rape accusations that turn out to be false. Mm. And filing a false police report is a crime, but a lot of people think it should go that extra step. And it was like, look, you were trying to ruin this person's life. You wanted him to lose his job, go to jail for years. you know, you should probably suffer more than a fine. Mm-hmm. You should probably do some jail time as well. And there are some people who are saying, well, look, if you make the accusation and it's false, then you suffer the jail time they would have served. And that's, I understand where that's coming from. It's not exactly where I would line up, because there's always the possibility of someone making a good faith but mistaken, whatever. And it might be, where am I going with this? I know where I want to go. Yeah. Weird. But I'm having trouble putting it into words, and I don't want to run the risk of offending people.
There might be an instance where there is some blame to go all around, where, again, like I mentioned on the Central Park Karen, I don't even remember what her name is. That's the name that the internet has given her, where she was being absolutely horrible, but she was not being absolutely horrible in a vacuum. The mm-hmm. man that she was threatening had essentially stated that he admitted that he keeps dog treats in his pockets to lure dogs that are not on leashes away from their owners, who are being irresponsible in his book. He is doing some vigilante justice, you could argue. And mm-hmm. he had leveled some minor threats against this woman before she made the phone call, essentially saying that he was going to take her dog away and for being irresponsible and things like that. So I would argue that in some of these cases, it is not just out of the blue mm-hmm. false accusation, where there may be some blame to go around. So therefore, it is not as simple as just this is no different than the rape itself. But this is rapidly devolving into how many angels can dance on the head of a pin.
Right. I need to wrap up, because I left something hanging, and I don't want people to get the wrong opinion. Yes, there should be penalties for people who willfully make false accusations, whether it is rape or red flag laws. I don't feel comfortable doing an absolute, well, what you were going to do to them should be visited upon you, because I want to have enough margin of error for people who are mistaken, but operating in some degree of good faith to protect them. You know, hey, I just woke up and I had sex and I don't remember having sex. I think I might have been raped. Oh, right. Now you've jogged my memory. I was drunk when I went home, or whatever. My bad. You know, as an example. And so what I'm getting at here is there should be penalties. I don't agree with the whole, what you wanted to do to them is going to happen to you. There. Done. I'm out.
fair enough.
I still feel like I did a horrible job, but talking about it more is not going to make it any better. You know what, Weird? We need to change the topic. Let's talk about something light and fun. And from what I understand, we have a very special guest contributor today.
Yes. And so for a little backstory, I mean, every parent knows this story. You go, it's time for bed, sweetie. And the response is, not yet, daddy, or not yet, mommy. I need to do X. And values of X are different in every house. Maybe they want to finish a video they're watching, or the level of the game that they're playing. Or they might say there's a family member that needs a hug. Oh, I need to pat the kitty first. Maybe they need to find a special toy for bedtime. In Weird World, my daughter responded to, honey, it's time for bed, with, but daddy, I want to record a segment. And of course, I'm no sucker. I'm like, all right, well, what do you want to do a segment about? And she said, I want to talk about going to school in 2020. And guess what? She won. It's a good subject. And you're about to hear the results were a really, really good segment. So here's my lovely daughter, Love Ball.
Hello, it's Love Ball. I'm going to be talking about Zoom school. So, Zoom school for me is, for a day, it's reading, writing, maybe writing your name. my first day was kind of frustrating and I kind of had some trouble with it. You might have that too, but I think it's a very nice thing that you actually get to see your friends and things on Zoom, but wouldn't it be better if you could see them in person? But it's actually good to have a Zoom, at least see people. But a Zoom day is basically reading, writing, maybe math, and writing your name, or doing the alphabet. I do writing, reading, and math, and that's a really good thing. But also, maybe it might get harder, and you gotta be prepared for that. And that's one thing, if you've done a lot of Zoom school, you know what's going to happen.
And so what about the days when you don't do Zoom school?
When you go in the school, you have to wear a mask the whole day. Do get a mask break, but the mask break is probably 10 or 12 minutes because it's just a quick snack. And it's a mask break, but you can't really do it for that long because it's not a very long snack. But when you're in the school, you can do basically the same, but you're just in the school and you have like math papers the teacher can hand out. Math papers, and you have like a reading, maybe you have like a reading box or something with lots of books. That's what I have, but you might have a bin with different supplies, markers, crayons, pencils, maybe even a pencil sharpener. And maybe you would have a giant book in there with folders that have different papers in it. And maybe you would have another folder for like poems and stuff. I'm in first grade, and that's all I want to say for today. Goodbye.
Wait, there's more to talk about. What about, so do you go to, when you go into school, do you go into school all day?
No, you only can go for the afternoon or the morning. I'm in the morning.
Yeah, and then what do you do for the rest of the day?
You have to do online stuff. You may have like a specialist that definitely has to be online.
Like who, like with a specialist, what do they do?
They help you do different exercises. That's a gym teacher. Then they have a music teacher that teaches you songs. And then we have all sorts of different specialists.
And you do that over Zoom?
Yes, we have to do that because you only have a half day.
Mm-hmm. And so
sometimes you have a specialist in the morning because you're going to go to school in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a specialist in the morning.
And what do you do for schoolwork when you're home?
You have maybe you have like a folder with different things, like maybe math papers and reading papers, and maybe you have a schedule for what you're supposed to do, and maybe you have a learning board with maybe a Zoom or maybe an online board on your device that you have all sorts of different things that you can use.
Yeah, so you play some like learning games and things like that?
Yeah, it's basically learning games, but maybe some math stuff. I have ST Math. That's a penguin who just runs and does stuff everywhere. But I have reading things. It's basically math games and reading games, but they're fun, but they're also reading and math stuff. That might not be fun if you don't do it on like a device. They can have games of it, and that might be really fun, but if you do the real thing, it might be a little boring if they're really hard and upsetting. So I think that's all for today. Goodbye.
So here's what I don't really understand. So yes, I get that she has school over Zoom in order to prevent transmission of the COVID, But at the same time, she's also going to school for half a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to me not to make sense. If you're worried about your children catching COVID, they should be on Zoom full time.
And that is the case on some. There's a, she actually has a friend that that has some health issues, and her parents are concerned about the potential of that. And she is on full time. There's actually teachers that are the full time Zoom teachers, and so it's a completely different classroom that is just for the kids that are full time away from school. But in this case, essentially, one of the big factors is proximity. You need to have social distancing and all of that. And so for them to have social distancing, they need to lower the number of students in the classroom. How do you do that? Well, you could build another school in theory, or in this case, everyone goes to school for half a day, and there's a morning cohort and an evening cohort or an afternoon cohort. So essentially, my daughter goes to school until lunchtime, and then she is released, and then goes home, and then does a little bit more schoolwork at home, and does some Zoom stuff with either her music teacher or her PE teacher. And so this allows it to be half the class size. I think there's like 7 people in her classroom, which is opposed to, I think it was like 21 was how big her kindergarten class is. So essentially they're able to shrink the class size and the students come through. And then it's essentially 2 days and then a deep clean. So Wednesday, everybody's at home, and essentially the janitorial staff is nuking the building to make sure that there's no lingering contaminants before everyone comes back. And then again, then 2 more days, then weekend. And so that is the premise behind it. And it is mask all day long, except for the brief snack break.
So do you think this is ever going to end? Because, all right, We've gotten through most of 2020, but now that we are beginning winter, we're also beginning cold and flu season again.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to mean more chances of COVID transmission. And I just wonder, are we ever going to be free, or is it maybe we'll compromise and just during flu season we'll have to social distance, but maybe during spring and summer we'll be able to act like normal humans. I'm a hermit. I avoid people. I'm feeling stressed by this. Not that I really want to go out and meet people, but it's like, you know, my family deals with the crap, and so it raises the stress level in the house, and so I end up feeling stressed, and I'm ready for this stuff to be done. And I see a couple of possibilities here. One possibility is that after the election, it'll all go away. And I don't know how I will feel about that if that happens. Because on the one hand, I will be glad that all the garbage is done. On the other hand, that'll just make me angry because it will essentially be them saying, yeah, it was all political. If it continues on, I don't know how long the country is going to be able to keep this up. We've already had people chafing at this, you know, as far back as June and July. It's only going to get worse. Or, you know, maybe it'll slowly peter off over the winter, and then by spring we'll be back to normal. I'd like that very much. I don't know. I know that I'm getting disgusted by all this. And again, I'm an introvert. You're an extrovert. I don't know how you're handling this at all.
I mean, it's rough, but I'll say I think another huge factor is going to be the development of a vaccine and how effective that is, because one new thing that's going on too within the schools is that they are requiring everyone to present proof of a flu shot vaccination for just further to lower the risk of infection, and also the false positive nature that is kids coming down with the flu. Actually, one of my daughter's friends actually let us know. Oh yeah, no, I just had a COVID test the other day, and I'm like, Why did you have a COVID test? Oh, I had a fever. And so they tested her, and no, it wasn't that. It was just a cold. But it definitely, it's if a child has any side of a cold or anything like that, they are not to go to school. And I mean, there might even be like legal penalties for ignoring that currently. But yeah, I see the vaccine as a big factor, but who knows? I don't know how much, because clearly the virus isn't going to go anywhere. It's still going to be around. So I don't know, Aaron. I really don't.
I probably should have said this at the beginning of this before we started talking about life in the time of COVID, but something your daughter said really hit home, and it was, but if you do the real thing, it might be really hard and upsetting. And I just have to say that perfectly describes my frustration with math from algebra onwards. Hard and really upsetting.
Yeah.
It's like arithmetic, I can do that. Everything after that, ow, my brain. I hate that feeling. It makes me feel so dumb, but that's my limitation. Add, subtract, multiply, divide. That's it. That's all I can do.
Since we're getting onto the light notes, I will add that the next evening, when I was telling her it's time for her to go to bed, she says, "No, Dad, I'm sewing a stuffed animal for me to sleep with." My wife is teaching her how to sew, and she had cut out a form of some sort of creature, and she had sewn the two sides together and was stuffing it and was just finishing stuffing it up so she could take it up to bed.
Well, I mean, if she was almost done, yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, it wasn't very long, but I find it hilarious that much like me, when there's a little bit of tired involved, those creative juices really start flowing.
Yeah. And now for something special. Our listeners, whether they are patrons or not, this episode will be close to Halloween. The patrons will have it before, and the non-patrons will have it after. But it, like Vampire Fangs, nicely brackets the Halloween. And so I was thinking that for Halloween episode, we should have creepy Halloween feast. And I find something during my nightly prowls that I thought would be good for Weird. And so I said, "Weird, you should do Fisk on this topic, because best way to describe is deep fake necromantic blood dancing." And so that is the topic for tonight's creepy Halloween Fisk.
Now, to get us in the Halloween spirit, Aaron found me some Fisk fodder that she describes as deepfake necromantic blood dancing. A little background. This is all a campaign push for a website called Unfinished Votes, which itself is a division of Change the Ref, which was founded by Manuel Oliver, who is the father of Joaquin Oliver, who was one of the children killed in the Parkland school shooting. I've been following Mr. Oliver for some time now, because he, like the March for Our Lives kids, have been operating under the umbrella of Michael Bloomberg and his Everytown anti-gun corporate lobby. While Change the Ref doesn't have the direct connections to Everytown like March for Our Lives does, I deeply suspect he's being bankrolled by Bloomberg. Now, I haven't fisted him before, frankly, because his presence really has just been sobbing about his dead son and asking for change, without ever saying what that change is. This Fisk won't be too different, but this time he crossed a different line, which fits so well for the Halloween spirit. Now, you haven't heard of Manuel Oliver, because really the nation doesn't care about gun control. They don't care so much that he made the debut for his anti-gun voting website on Good Morning Britain?
At the age of 17, Joaquin Oliver was killed in a shooting at a school in Florida. The gunman, a former student, walked in, opened fire, and killed 17 people and injured 17 more.
Of course, everybody listening to this knows the truth about Parkland. The shooter was a troubled, violent child who had dozens of run-ins with law enforcement, but no charges were ever filed. Leading up to the shooting, he told anybody who would listen, including the FBI, about his murderous intentions. And nothing was done. He was banned from entering the school property because of his past violence and threats, but the school never consulted the police. But when all those safeguards failed, and a person who should have never been free passed a background check, bought a rifle, entered a gun-free school zone, and started shooting, the school resource officer hid outside where it was safe. When the Broward County Sheriff's Department responded, they hid outside where it was safe. The reality is that many of those dead probably could have been saved, but since the police refused to clear the scene, even after the killer had left the building, medics couldn't enter the school to render aid to the wounded. For all we know, Joaquin could have been wounded and bled to death waiting for help to arrive. Of course, the media doesn't talk about this. Instead, they focus on banning guns.
It's now 2 years on, and his parents, who've been campaigning against gun violence, have used remarkable technology to bring a realistic virtual version of Joaquin to life. Their aim is to encourage young Americans to vote.
Here's where the Halloween deepfake necromantic blood dancing comes in. They digitally resurrected their dead son to encourage young people to vote. I must say, if there is one thing you can say about the American youth and voting, it's they don't do it. But hey, that's with past efforts like MTV's Rock the Vote, Sean Puffy Coombs with his Vote or Die campaign, and Facebook constantly telling me to register to vote. Those have been ineffective. But this video promoting an unknown website broadcast on a morning TV show in the UK is going to get those 18 to 24 year old Americans off their couches and into the polling places.
Let's have a look at the video and just bear in mind, this is using artificial intelligence to get a message that Joaquin himself wouldn't have been able to deliver.
I love how they say using artificial intelligence, and this is played off as some massive technology feat. Yet nobody talks about the technology used or how it works. I suspect there was some AI used. Like maybe they used predictive speech movements or maybe even some predictive body movements. Maybe they digitally aged his face and voice to create a synthesizer from old home videos. Either way, what they made was a complicated digital puppet that looks like their dead son and will say whatever they ask him to say.
So we found a way to bring back someone that no one will ignore.
This reminds me a lot of Mark Kelly using his wife, former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, as a living puppet for his political gains. I was thinking, sure, they're using their son as a puppet, but at least it's an obviously fake and virtual son. But they're using the fact that he's dead to make their words beyond question. What we're about to hear are not their son's words, but words chosen by Manuel Oliver or possibly somebody from Michael Bloomberg's staff, but then played through the mouth of a dead kid to add credence to it.
Yo, it's me. It's Guac.
His friends at school found Joaquin too difficult to say, so they called him Guac. It's kind of cute. But this is not Guac. He's no more Guac than Peter Cushing in the 2016 Star Wars Rogue One as Grand Moff Tarkin. This is a puppet doing what the puppeteers tell it to do.
I've been gone for 2 years and nothing's changed, bro.
Well, we did get a bump stock ban. Another reason to hate that tribe. The anti-gunners don't even count it as a victory now. But the gun owners see it as the loss that it is. Still, this is the first of many vague statements. What did he want to see? Police reform? More troubled people being taken into custody when they make threats? Real security in schools? Ending the gun-free school zones? You can speculate endlessly.
People are still getting killed by guns. What is that?
Reality. Sorry to sound so callous, but hey, I'm responding to a reanimated dead kid being puppeted by his narcissist father and mother. People have been killed with guns since guns were invented. The Bible speaks about Cain killing his brother Abel with a stone, and people are still being killed with rocks today. I don't know if they're trying to make their dead son sound profound or something. Really, they're just making him sound stupid.
Everyone knows it, but they don't do anything. I'm tired of waiting for someone to fix it.
This is why I can't fist this guy. Everybody knows what? What would you like for people to do? And fix what? People getting killed with guns? Have I mentioned that Guac is an immigrant? He was born in Venezuela, and his folks fled the country. Oddly, Venezuela had sweeping gun bans and heavy restrictions, and a massive gun violence problem. So they made this animation just to bring their son back to show the world that he's just another stereotypical millennial, complaining about everything and offering nothing of substance. That's really classy, guys.
The election in November is the first one I could have voted in, but I'll never get to choose the kind of world I wanted to live in. So you've got to replace my vote.
Good luck with that. If Guac was alive today, chances are he wouldn't vote in November, unless his folks browbeat him into going to the polls. Oh, by the way, I've been a political junkie since I was a teenager. When I turned 18, I was super excited to vote. My first ballot was for a town election. And guess what? I spent minimal time researching the candidates and the ballot questions, and my vote was really deeply uninformed.
Vote for politicians who care more about people's lives than the gun lobby's money.
First up, I suspect this expensive animation was made with the funding from an anti-gun lobby. Second, as I say damn near every FISC, when gun control is passed, violent crime goes up, not down. Guns save lives, and gun control gets people killed. And this was paid for with anti-gun money, and said through the mouth of a dead kid. This is really disgusting stuff.
Vote for people not getting shot, bro.
I mean, I do. Guns save lives. If you support the anti-gun agenda, you're supporting more people getting shot, not less.
The extraordinary ability to use digital technology to recreate your son and to send this message across. Manuel, it must be very hard for you to watch.
I doubt it, as his only claim to fame is his dead son, and now he's just gone further using his boy's blood to attempt to boost his own voice and fame.
So everything that we do now in order to honor Joaquin and be part of a solution.
How are you honoring him? The portrait you paint of him is very unflattering and remarkably similar to your own positions. And what's your solution? Your creepy little revenant didn't offer anything of substance. And I've yet to hear you say anything actionable. Oh, and his mom, Patricia, is also in on the game.
It is really hard to be able to bring Joaquin in this way. But, you know, he is an actor.
Okay, her English isn't quite as good as her husband's, so maybe she meant something different. But really, this little slip of the tongue is true. This is an actor, a puppet, a piece of performance fiction for their own personal gain.
We consider more important to be able to send the message because we believe in Joaquin's activism.
Joaquin's activism? Or your activism fed through his dead mouth?
Manuel, over here in the UK, we have suffered with gun violence, but immediate action was taken.
In the case of the Dunblane massacre, this is correct. And violent crime went up after the sweeping bans, including gun crime. Of course, the gun crime numbers did go down a few years later. Except it was revealed that the UK Home Office was fudging the crime data, and after they got caught, gun crime went way up. Again. I'm amazed these ghouls can say common sense gun control with a straight face.
I think a lot of people here cannot understand why, after the repeated school shootings that happen in the United States, and your son was killed in the Parkland shooting back in February 2018, why more is not done to crack down on gun violence.
You mean, like, do the crap that the UK did that made things worse? Why would America want to do that?
So this is beyond schools, okay? Gun violence in America is not a Parkland or a school thing. 100 people will die today and another 100 will die tomorrow because of gun violence.
So what he's saying is correct, except he has to be guarded about how he presents it. And thankfully, these anti-gun limeys aren't going to upset that dirty little apple cart. So yes, school shootings like the one that killed his son are amazingly rare. On a bad year, only a few dozen people die in spree killings of any kind. So where do those 100 deaths come from? Well, about 60% are suicide, which is a serious problem, and we need to address it. But Bloomberg's gun control models do nothing to address suicide. And in the case of red flag laws and universal background checks, it makes it worse. The remainder is inner city violence, mostly centered around the illegal drug trade and gang wars. We really don't talk about this, especially in the era of defund the police. And also, Michael Bloomberg's laws don't affect criminals, only lawful gun owners. So yes, it goes beyond school shootings. But except for the numbers boost, they completely ignore it.
To answer your question about who can solve this problem, I think we have a gun culture problem that has been here for decades.
What? A gun culture problem? So what about the gun culture in America is the problem? Are hunters killing people by the hundreds? What about collectors? Hell, who's been killed by a militia in America? CSGV cooked up a list of concealed carry killers, and even that turned out to be totally bunk. So excuse me, gun culture in America isn't a problem. Suicide is a problem, but gun culture isn't like traditional Japanese culture who honors seppuku. Gang culture is a problem, but while gangs use guns, I wouldn't consider them part of American gun culture, especially since the American people have outlawed most of what gangs use guns for. And right here, we have the closest to a political or policy statement Manuel Oliver has ever made.
Is Donald Trump the guy that will fix this? Definitely no. Actually, it's a fact that Donald Trump received $40 million for his campaign in 2016 from the NRA.
So I agree with everything he just said. Think about that. This is how wishy-washy this guy is. Do I think Donald Trump will solve the gun violence issues in America? No. Did Donald Trump take a bunch of NRA money both in 2016 and for the 2020 campaign? Yep. Does this mean that I think Joe Biden will be better? Well, given that Joe Biden has spoken favorably on mandatory buybacks, as well as placing modern rifles and magazines on the NFA registry, and such laws have been proven to increase gun crime, both in America and in places like the UK, no. Also, for Mr. Oliver specifically, the NRA didn't kill his son. This wasn't a failure of gun policy. It was the negligence of the FBI and the Broward County Sheriff's Department. And Joe Biden has spoken favorably for defunding the police.
That needs to end. And it's starting to be an issue that we're solving. The youth of America are trying to demand changes, and they're already happening. I'm very proud of them, and we are part of that movement.
Well, he ends the interview on an optimistic note. Completely delusional, but it's optimistic. The youth aren't voting, and they aren't getting involved in gun control. When was the last time you heard anything about March for Our Lives? David Hogg, who isn't even directly associated with that group anymore, is the only person who seems to have any recognition, and he recently asked his Twitter followers if they wanted to hear him do daily videos on gun control and politics. 84% said, no thanks. And the Olivers really aren't doing anything. Chances are you've never heard of them, or their departed, now reanimated son before you even heard this Fisk. And this interview was done on a British morning show, not an American one. And these ladies cared so much about the Olivers and their cause.
Very powerful message, isn't it? Very powerful. Laura is going to give us the weather for today now.
What happened to summer?
Yep, they cut right to the perky weather girl. They care because they're paid to care. Just like how anti-gun activists are paid to lie about the benefits of gun control. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
You know, I know that everyone grieves in their own way, and I've never lost someone close to me. I've never had a child, so I don't know what it's like to lose a child. I don't ever want to learn. I understand people have to cope and have to grieve. This just seems creepy, maybe to the point of sick. You know, I can't stop grieving my child, and so I will resurrect them online. I'm not a psychologist, so maybe this isn't as bad as it seems, but just from where I stand, this seems really bad.
I went ahead and accused the Oliver family of being narcissists in this, and I will say that one of the key features of narcissism is having boundary issues and not being able to delineate the difference between themselves and others. On the success of somebody that's near them is their success, as well, and things like that. And also, I pointed out the fact that Manuel Oliver has been around since Parkland. I've been seeing him. He's created this YouTube channel. I mean, go to the show notes and you can look at his YouTube channel and scroll back and see how far back when his first video came through. But as soon as I saw him start appearing at Bloomberg groups, I'm like, okay, I need to watch this guy, because he's started his own group and his charity, and he does performance art and things like that. So I want to see what kind of anti-gun propaganda he's spewing. And he doesn't spew anything. He really hasn't said much of anything. He's just been supportive of Michael Bloomberg and his groups. And he will often speak ill of the quote unquote gun lobby, but really just saying the gun lobby is bad and not say why it's bad or what he wants to change. And the fact that this deep fake revenant guac was essentially doing the exact same thing. You know, what are we going to do to change this? Well, what do you want? What would be a good change? I want you to vote for who, for what? It is all just empty. It's sound and fury signifying nothing, to quote the bard. And the fact that that's so similar to his, it really strikes me as this is not his son's words. This is his words played through a CGI version of his son. You point out the fact that everyone grieves in their own way. And I agree. I can't fault them for hurting. I can't, even though I disagree with them. And I very much disagree with this. You heard my Fisk, but also there's healthy grieving and then there's unhealthy grieving. You know, you could clearly see that the person who's sad and crying and needs to be surrounded by friends and family at all times and maybe take some time off of work because of the loss of a family member. Yeah, that's reasonable grieving. The person that's turning to, say, drugs and alcohol to just make the pain go away, that's unhealthy grieving. That's self-harm. And I certainly see this as closer to the latter than the former.
It's perhaps something like self-medication via video or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good example. Escapism. It is entirely possible to be addicted to video games to get that feeling of escape. And so that could be something like that. It's just, you know, as long as we are making these videos, he's still alive. And yeah, I know that I hammed up the segment and that's for Halloween. But I don't want to make it seem like I'm completely flippant. I don't know how much of the family is narcissist versus how much is grieving unhealthily, but I think we both agree that those parents need help.
Mm-hmm. And the help that they're getting from Michael Bloomberg is not the right kind.
No, it's not.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP Magnum.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And you can hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You know where to find me. And I'm going to provide a link so you can listen to my segment on the two-way rally for your rights. And I want everyone to listen and write me a 100-word essay on the topics I covered. No, not really. But I do want you to listen.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
So he is called Weird, and he is funny man from Maine, whereas I am pretty, pretty vampire pony princess, also known as Horseferatu, our dark fates are sorted just like our podcast. Good evening.
Good evening, everyone.